This week on the show, we are flying high on football and NFL and Patriots season preview with 98.5 The Sports Hub's Michael Hurley. And I guess the Red Sox kind of sucked this weekend.
Yeah, they sucked.
Yeah, we probably need to touch on that too. All of that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Welcome into Calling It, week one of the NFL season football preview. I'm Alex Barth. He's Alex Lubowitz. We made it, man. Long summer. We are here. Real football starts Thursday night.
It's great. I'm excited for it. You're raising the banner.
And you know what? I will say this. The 90 to 53 roster cutdown really made the final week more interesting. Here to talk about that from the point of view of the Patriots, as well as some other stuff from 98.5 The Sports Hub, Michael F. Hurley, and the F is for football. How's it going?
I like that. It's going well. How are you?
We're doing well, getting excited. What'd you make of the 90 to 53 cutdown as opposed to 75 to 53? Do you think that changed the Patriots' strategy at all?
I don't know if it changed the strategy, but it certainly made for a dizzying Saturday for anyone trying to follow it and anyone trying to, you know, figure out what they were doing. And then you mix in a trade of the third-string quarterback for a receiver, which, you know, adjusts the depth chart that way, where maybe a guy like Austin Carr was someone who maybe had a chance and then no longer did. So, yeah, it was It was a wild day. As far as the NFL, they managed to, you know, manufacture everything into television events. I'm sure this will be a live television event sooner than later.
What cut surprised you the most from this weekend?
I guess it wasn't surprising, but I was hopeful for Austin Carr. I thought he made sense in this offense. I thought he's pretty accomplished. He's coming off something like a 1,200-yard season at Northwestern. You know, it's not like he's coming out of nowhere, and I thought he was someone that might make sense, and maybe that could be useful down the line if you suffer one more injury at receiver, because the Edelman injury leaves you a little bit susceptible you're not thin there, certainly, but it's a very important position, so I thought he might have an outside chance, but once they made that trade and got Dorsett in, I kind of saw the writing on the wall there.
Yeah, they made quite a few trades this weekend, and to do so, they let go of guys like Brandon Bolden, special teamers. He's already back at practice today. How much do you expect the 53-man roster to change between today and Thursday night?
Well, there's not a whole lot of time for that one. I think Bolden was going to come back because Bill Belichick loves him as much as his own children, I'm pretty sure. If you can excel on special teams, you can have a job with Belichick for many years. So I would be surprised if any more changes before Thursday. But then, I mean, Belichick has talked about it already this during the preseason, that he's at a slight disadvantage having won the Super Bowl, having to play on that Thursday. Whereas
tough disadvantage.
I know. It's really, I mean, everyone feels sympathy for him, I'm sure, around the league. But, you know, you win the Super Bowl, you get to play that opening night on Thursday. But that costs you a couple days when it comes to the roster juggling. So, I mean, they were talking about it a lot. They were open about how they were basically cramming for KC and their roster decisions and all that throughout the offseason. So I think they're probably comfortable where they are now going into Thursday, and then they might maybe do some maneuvering over the weekend, I would say.
So not too many questions in terms of starting spots on this team, but the one big one, who's returning punts?
It is a question, and I think, you know, I looked at it. The Patriots were something like 25th or 26th in the league last year in punt return yards at 6.9 yards or something. So, I mean, they were by far, well, maybe not by far, but they were the best team in the AFC and the best team in the NFL, and punt returns were not a huge part of their thing. So we might be overstating the impact. I think, you know, Danny Amendola is sure-handed, but is someone who's going to put himself in harm's way if he returns too many kicks. I think to start the year, you might see him just fair catch a lot of punts. Just get back there, catch the ball, let's start. And yeah, it might cost you 7 yards on average in field position, but Amendola is going to be a useful person down the stretch. He's someone that they try to preserve until the end of the year to get going for the playoffs. So he's as sure-handed as it comes, and I think that's crucial, that's critical. You had Chris Harper back there a couple of years ago in Denver, pretty much lost you the game. So as long as someone's not booting it away and being Cyrus Jones out there, I think it's going to be okay. I just wouldn't expect anything. I wouldn't expect many great punt returns from the Patriots this year, but they proved last year that they didn't necessarily need that.
And one other person that's floated around has been Philip Dorsett, who the Patriots got for Jacoby Brissett. Beyond special teams, where do you expect him to fit into this team?
Well, I know that in Indy he's basically considered a first-round bust because he didn't really explode. But, A, I would say that a Grigson first-round pick should not be viewed as a first-round pick because he made some awful first-round picks, just truly horrific first-round picks if you look at his history. So if you start to evaluate Dorsett in the way that he was drafted earlier than he should have been. And he was in an offense where Andrew Luck was, he missed 10 games in the past 2 years. He played behind an awful offensive line. It's hard to put up numbers as a receiver in that offense. So I'm willing to let some of that bust tag slide. I think early I would have low expectations for him as he learns the offense. And then it's a matter of can he learn it or not. And I don't know that. Some guys have come in and have learned quickly, figured it out, been a big part of the offense. Others never worked out. So it's no sure thing, but he's got the speed. And, I mean, the speed alone should make him intriguing. Send him on a few deep routes. Maybe he doesn't have the whole offense down to start the year for the first 4 or 5 weeks. But, you know, the man can run in a straight line and catch the ball. So I think if you have him on one side and Cooks on the other and Gronk in the middle, it presents a lot of difficult decisions for defenses to make. So I wouldn't go buying your Dorsett jersey just yet, but you have to at least be intrigued by the possibility.
And you mentioned the speed of Cooks, Dorsett, Hogan. As far as I can remember, Belichick's never had this kind of speed and talent on the field as long as he's been in New England. How much do you expect them to shift the offense to more of a down-the-field speed kind of offense given the personnel they have?
Yeah, and, you know, they have the personnel for it, and that's a huge thing. But obviously the deep passes are not the high-percentage passes that they like to throw in this offense, and that's where I think the real beneficiaries of all that is going to be the running backs out of the backfield. If you have James White, Deion Lewis, Rex Burkhead, and Gillislee, you know, mostly those first guys, White and Lewis, and one-on-one matchups against, you know, the third best coverage linebacker on the field because one of them's on Gronk and one of them's doing something else, that's going to open up so much for those guys to just basically make one move, get open, and have a lot of field in front of them. And we saw that in the preseason game against Houston with Burkhead scoring the same touchdown. They scored the same touchdown twice on that play. Just, you know, send the guy, run toward the corner, take a step, plant your leg, run to the middle of the field, and you're open. So it helps with the downfield passing, and we saw Hogan really serve in that role last year, and you add someone like Cooks to it, and it is dangerous. So that should work in and of itself, but then you think about what it can do for those shorter passes and what it can do for Gronkowski if he's in single coverage. It is a nightmare for all defensive coordinators trying to figure out how to go against that. And so I'm actually really excited to see it in a real game action right away Thursday. I don't expect it to click on every single cylinder, but it's still going to be pretty exciting to watch.
Was this deal for Dorsett a move where Bill was targeting Philip Dorsett from the Colts, or was this simply just them trying to dump Brissett and get something in return?
Probably a little of both. I do think Brissett would have had – I don't think they wanted to keep three quarterbacks on the 53-man roster. You saw some of the decisions they made. They wanted guys like Cole Crosston, someone that no one expected to make it, and you know, Ted Karras gets cut. They were doing some stuff on the offensive line, and that's obviously a pretty important spot. So I think a third quarterback who, A, probably isn't going to play, and B, if he does play, you're in trouble anyway. I don't think if you need your third-string quarterback for any stretch of time, you're pretty much in trouble anyway. So I don't think Brissett had a role this year. Maybe beyond that, he'd make a good backup, but I don't think he was part of the long-term plan. So they were, in that regard, fortunate to get something for him, but Indy is obviously a team I'm sure the Patriots looked at and said, those guys need a quarterback. Scott Tolzien is not going to lead them to any victories, and Brissett might have a better ceiling. So it kind of worked out for both teams where the Colts couldn't risk not getting Brissett on the waiver wire. So I think there was probably a little bit of both, but it kind of does work out for both teams, at least for the short term.
After not making a trade with the Colts his entire tenure in New England, Belichick's now made two here in this offseason. Dwayne Allen back before the draft, and now this one for Philip Dorsett. Are you surprised Belichick's been so active with a team that historically has, as you know, has bad blood with the Patriots? Real bad blood, not just on the field, but off?
Yeah, and I wonder how much the Gregson departure plays into that. I don't think Belichick would be dialing up Ryan Gregson for anything other than to basically fart into the telephone or something like that. So I don't know that that would have ever happened. So, yeah, it's a little bit surprising, but also I think the Colts are – you know, they're not the team they were 2 years ago, and they're in a different spot, and, you know, they need to sort of reset themselves. They need to get some offensive linemen in there to protect their franchise quarterback so he doesn't break before his 30th birthday. And the Patriots are trying to win a Super Bowl. So, I mean, Bill will do anything. I mean, he made two trades with Seattle this week, too, where that's not a trading partner you would have probably guessed them to work with. I'm sure Seattle, the last thing they want to do is take a phone call from Foxborough because it brings up all sorts of bad memories. So, I do think Bill will trade with anyone. I mean, I'm sure he'd make a trade with the Jets if they answered the phone. I don't think that would happen anytime soon, but, you know, I don't think Belichick would be – he would be petty for sure, but I don't think he'd be so much so to hurt the team.
And we're talking with Michael Hurley of 98.5, the Sports Hub. You mentioned the Seattle trade there. Cassius Marsh, a lot of people in New England seem to be not necessarily confused, but not really sure what the Patriots are getting in Cassius Marsh. I've watched him a couple times. I like him. I'm curious your impression of him and if he can fill, if you think he can fill that third down pass rushing void left by the departure of Chris Long.
Yeah, and we were just talking on the radio today about how the Chris Long departure could be sneaky valuable, because I watched Long all year from the preseason. You could see he was just a guy, not to get all cliche, but he did his job. And his job wasn't always getting to the quarterback and racking up huge sack totals or getting a lot of tackles for loss. His job was to set the edge, keep everything to the inside, don't let the running back get outside of you, occupy the tackle, take on a running back if need be. I mean, the guy did a lot, and that's why he ultimately left, because he kind of considered himself more of a, you know, top of the draft talent that he was, and then he was sort of a role player. But you need the role player, so maybe Marsh can be that guy. I honestly haven't, you know, closely watched his games out in Seattle. He's definitely not, you know, the biggest star on the Seattle defense. You watch about nine guys before you'd watch him. But I generally find, if I'm another team, right, if I'm Seattle and Belichick says he wants Marsh, I'm going to say, all right, I need to reevaluate how I'm using Marsh, because he's obviously better than I'm using him. So I think, you know, Belichick targets these people for a reason. So it will be, I mean, I don't know what kind of impact he'll make early, but it's one of those things that is definitely a need for the team. And you're not really giving up too much for it. You're giving up a pick and Coleman basically for the trade. So it will be a very important role. Whether Marsh can fill it, we'll see.
It seems like the defensive line is going to be the weak point of this Patriots team. How concerned should Patriots fans be over this defensive front?
Well, you got to take into account the defensive backfield too is going to help a lot. If Gilmore and Butler play the way they're capable of, and McCourty stays healthy and Chung stays healthy, that's going to take care of a lot of the hard work, where the D-line is going to have that extra tick to get to the quarterback, flush him out of the pocket, maybe force a turnover, things like that. I don't think it's a traditionally great edge rushing team. I mean, you'll probably see Hightower come off the edge more than we're used to, but I still think that defensive backfield should be sort of not an equalizer, but it should help a lot. Now, at the same time, if you suffer an injury to either one of those safeties, you're going to be in a lot of trouble, because I don't think Harmon is at that level. Ebner obviously is not at that level. He's more of a special teamer. So I think kind of quietly, the health of those two safeties is as important as anything on the defense, you know, because you take the back end off and you're susceptible to the deep ball. Quarterbacks will have the time to get it, and that could be a problem. So as much as the defensive line is an issue, I would be equally as concerned with the health, especially of the safeties.
Again, we're talking to Michael Hurley of 98.5 The Sports Hub. Michael, before I let you go here, you know as well as anybody the process that the NFL goes through regarding suspensions, and it seems like deja vu all over again with the Ezekiel Elliott situation. Jeff Passan back in the building, some familiar names back in the building down there in New York, in Manhattan. How do you see this Ezekiel Elliott thing playing out in the end?
I've learned throughout the 2 years of Deflategate to never confidently try to predict anything, because just when you think you have something cornered and figured out, something completely ass backwards happens. So basically, it looks like the same thing over again. The NFL ran a clown show of an investigation with all sorts of flaws from start to finish. It looks like they wanted to play courtroom again and have a 3-day hearing when they're not a courtroom. They really shouldn't be doing that. They're not equipped to do that. We saw when the hearing transcript came out from Brady how much of a clown show that situation was. So my best guess is that, you know, the appeal knocks it down maybe. I don't know. I don't know what the appeal is going to do, but I know that I feel as though whatever it is, Elliott's going to appeal to a court. He already has filed the lawsuit. I bet he plays through the year. The thing gets pushed to the offseason. What happens at that point, who knows? I mean, Goodell has all sorts of power, but when it comes to domestic violence, the judge that hears the case might be more interested than he would be over a puff of air in a football. So there's a little bit more gravity to it, and there's a little bit more of a real life situation to it. It's not just the fun and games of stupid Deflategate. So I do think it will. My best guess is Elliott will play. The whole thing will get pushed off. A court will hear it in February. And then from there, who knows? But I get the feeling, based on what we've learned already about the process between the NFL lead investigator suggesting no suspension and then being left out of the hearing with Goodell to suggest 6 games, is just such a mess. And it's this team. And the one thing, not to go on too long, but the one thing that you have to consider, which is pathetic, is that Lisa Friel, the head of domestic violence, you know, investigations, is a huge Giants fan. And she let Josh Brown go with 1 game last year when they actually knew what he did, what he admitted to, what the NFL security had intervened with. And then you get Giants Cowboy situation. The Cowboy gets six games with a much murkier situation. It's just if fandom of a team plays into these things, then the NFL should just be shut down because the whole thing is just a joke. So who knows where it's going to go? It's just clearly a huge mess.
And I didn't even realize that thing about Giants Cowboys. That's wrong. That's You really shouldn't be able to be a fan of a team if you're working at that position. At what point does what can Roger Goodell do at this point? Is there anything he could do that would put his job in jeopardy?
Probably not. I thought when the Brown situation, because the Brown situation last summer was a dead-on carbon copy of the Ray Rice situation. You try to underpunish someone because you like the owner or you like the player or whatever, and you try to sweep it under the rug and hope no one notices. And then when you get called on it, you retroactively punish him severely, and then you hide from the media and you don't answer any questions. And I thought last year Goodell was deserving of getting fired for not only trying to sneak that by everyone, but then dodging the media, going to England and doing a BBC interview and saying, well, people are basically too dumb to understand how complex it is. So I think the guy's bulletproof, to be honest with you. As long as the league's making money, the owners don't really care about this stuff. They might pay lip service to it, but they don't care. So as long as they're making money, the owners want continuity. That's what they want to present to the world, to the sponsors, to the networks, to the NFLPA with the upcoming labor agreement coming up. So that's what they want. I don't think there's much Goodell can do to lose his job, to be honest with you. I think we learned that firsthand here in New England.
Michael Hurley, always fighting the good fight. You can follow him on Twitter at Michael F. Hurley and hear him on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Mike, thanks for coming on. Hopefully we'll hear from you again this season.
Yep, thanks. And if anyone wants to see me, I'll be the one giving the standing ovation to Goodell at Gillette on Thursday night. the well-earned standing ovation that all Gillette fans will give him.
Shouldn't be hard to spot. Thanks for coming on, Mike.
Thank you.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
All right. Thanks to Michael Hurley for dishing some knowledge and maybe the best line we've ever had on this show.
Yes.
About Bill Belichick farting into a phone. The best visual image ever presented on the Calling It podcast.
Yeah, that's my number one line. It's a great interview, too. One of my favorite interviews we've done.
No, he was great. Helped us kind of get ready for the big picture thing.
Yep.
It all starts Thursday night, though, against the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think a perfect opponent for the Patriots when it comes to week one, because a team they should beat, but it's not going to be a walk in the park. They got to show up and play Thursday night.
Yeah, this is a decent NFL team. Are they, you know, top three in the AFC? Probably not, but still, you have a veteran quarterback and Alex Smith, a pretty good defense, a really good pass rush with Houston and Ford. So this is going to be a test for the Patriots, and I think you put it best. It is the perfect week one matchup for this team.
And I think a lot of this game has to do with why the Patriots went so heavy on special teams in their roster. The Chiefs are one of the best special teams units in the NFL, and it all starts with Tyreek Hill, a guy who mm-hmm. emerged last year, and this is traditionally the kind of guy that gives the Patriots fits.
Yeah, he's a young guy. He's his second year in the league, and he's a speedster. So yeah, they have the secondary to match up with him, and obviously the Patriots are known for having a great special teams. I don't think that's going to be much of an issue.
I mean, look, we'll get it more into college football later, but look at the game Saturday night, Alabama FSU. Mm-hmm. Special teams can decide games.
Yeah,
watching that game made me feel a lot better about what Belichick's done. One thing from the Michael Hurley interview I want to bring up, though, when you asked him about the Patriots and Colts trade and whether it was the Patriots wanting to ship out Jacoby Brissett or them wanting to go out and acquire a receiver, I saw it a third way.
Okay.
I think the Colts initiated that. I don't think it was the Patriots.
Okay.
I from everything I heard after his performance against the Giants, Brissett was going to stay on this team somehow, whether it be the practice squad or actually on the roster, but it doesn't. I just feel like it was the Colts reaching out to Belichick. It's just not the kind of trade he usually makes.
Yeah, I get that. I don't know. I think Belichick has not been all that impressed with Brissett. I think Brissett's a decent quarterback. He makes some good throws every once in a while. He can move on his feet, but he makes a lot of mistakes. And I know he's only in his second year, but I think Belichick, I don't know, I disagree with that. I think Belichick wanted to get rid of him somehow and get something in return. That's usually the way it works. He reaches out to someone.
But don't you think he would have traded him for something on defense if it was Belichick going out and looking? Isn't he probably looking for a linebacker or a pass rusher?
Ideally, but sometimes you can't get those guys. I think it was either trade him or release him. And you saw that with Coney Ealy. They were looking for a trade partner before they cut him, and they couldn't find one. What do you know? 2 days later, he's off the team. I think that's kind of the way Belichick does it. It's a matter of whether or not the team wants to risk it and hope that this player reaches them in the waiver claim, or if they want to actually pull the trigger and deal something for him.
Okay, so back to Patriots Chiefs here, and I hate doing position by position breakdowns.
Yeah.
I don't know if you watched NFL Network last night or if you've seen the clip. Because NFL Network sucks and Maurice Jones-Drew sucks, we're going to have to do.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
All right. Coaching advantage. Go.
The Patriots.
So if you haven't seen the clip yet, Maurice Jones-Drew, first off, says he's gone vegan. He does not look like he's gone vegan.
Prince Fielder was a vegan, too.
He's looking a little like Prince Fielder these days, is Maurice Jones-Drew. Starts talking about, you know, Belichick's great, but Andy Reid, he's all about the snacks. And he gives some record about Andy Reid being, I think, like 20-3 in either week one games or games after the bye with having the extra week to prepare. Belichick's record is better in that. I don't have the complete one in front of me, but I know for sure as the head coach of the Patriots, he's only lost coming off the bye once. And every time he loses week one, he wins the Super Bowl. Asinine. I thought we were done with this with NFL Network.
I don't know how you could ever say any other team has the coaching advantage when they're playing the Patriots.
But it's not just any other team. Every time the Chiefs lose to the Patriots and they've played them,
it's clock management.
Twice in the playoffs recently, right? It's a coaching thing.
Yeah.
Every time the Chiefs lose to the Patriots, it's because of the coach.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
You think he'd know how to clock manage at this point, but I don't know. The Kool-Aid man can't do it.
He falls asleep at the wheel like only John Farrow can. There are certain coaches, and I think he is a good coach to an extent. Look, he took some – those Philly teams were legit.
He's a top 10 coach in the NFL.
I don't know about – I kind of put him in that Mike Tomlin category. His teams have a lot of success, and he gets more credit for it than he deserves. He's not a Marvin Lewis kind of coach.
No.
But I wouldn't – if he's a top 10 coach, it's because there aren't that many good coaches.
Yeah, I'd agree with that too, though.
I think Mike Tomlin's the perfect comparison. I think Harbaugh is another one in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
You're now seeing what it looks like when he doesn't have the kind of defensive talent he needs to run his scheme. That team's going to be a mess this year.
Absolutely.
And we'll get more into the NFL preview stuff in a bit. So I want to bring it back to the Patriots to Thursday night. Obviously the coaching advantage, the quarterback advantage for the Patriots. I am curious. Do you think we see Pat Mahomes in this game?
No, I don't think so. I think it's Alex Smith's spot. Yeah, I don't think they're going to stick a rookie out there when you have a guy who's taken you to the playoffs before. You know, this isn't a Colin Kaepernick situation. I don't think they're going to pull the trigger this fast.
To be fair, the original Colin Kaepernick situation, not the current Colin Kaepernick
situation. Yes, the original. The
Dak Prescott, Tom Brady, Colin Kaepernick kind of situation. Those are three names that are very interesting to throw into a pile together.
Okay, yeah, they all have that in common. I don't think it's like that. I think you're going to have to wait a little bit before you see Mahomes under center. He did a really good job this preseason, and it's clear that they don't think Alex Smith is the future. But right now, Alex Smith is probably better for this team than Mahomes would be.
Yeah, see, I think Smith has a short leash. They can let him go next year. His contract has two more years, but they can let him go next at the end of this year with not a big salary cap hit. This is his de facto last year of his contract. Mahomes has been great in the preseason. He is kind of similar. He is more similar to Donovan McNabb than Alex Smith is. And that was Andy Reid's baby. That offense, and granted, he doesn't have his Brian Westbrook with Spencer Ware going down, Jamal Charles now in Denver.
Yeah.
He doesn't have that guy. If the Chiefs get that, the Chiefs are only good when they have a good running back. Larry Johnson, Priest Holmes, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I wouldn't be shocked if the Chiefs get down early or if Smith throws a couple of early picks, has a couple of bad turnovers. I would not be shocked if Pat Mahomes comes in this game after halftime, if Alex Smith is struggling. If it's close, if Alex Smith is holding his own, I don't think they're going to force Mahomes into it. But again, I think there is a much shorter leash for Alex Smith this season than people realize.
Maybe. I think you talk about him. They have the option to cut him next year, not take that big of a cap hit. Why not keep him this season, have your backup quarterback, who's a rookie, grow, and then have him fight for that starting position next year?
Because that division is so bad, they can win it with Mahomes.
But can they beat the Patriots? Can they beat the Raiders?
But they can win the division, and that, unlike other sports, that matters. It's not like the NBA where it's, oh, well, we can't beat the Warriors, so it doesn't matter. Winning the division matters in the NFL.
Yeah.
And if they can get – they probably won't win it because of Oakland, but if they can get in on a wild card, that's a bad division. You have two wins against San Diego. You can probably count for two wins against Denver. They're good enough that they should beat Denver twice. They could be in it, and if Patrick Mahomes gives you a better chance at making the playoffs, I think you're going to go with him. You're not going to sit this year out. They're not in tank mode.
Maybe. There's always exceptions. We saw, again, Dak Prescott last year, he was a rookie. He played very well with a great offensive line in front of him and a lot of targets. He had a lot more weapons than Mahomes would have if he was a starter for this team, and I think that factors into it. I'm in the camp that, like, you get a quarterback – top three rounds, whatever it is, I don't think it's such a bad thing to have them sit the first season and learn. We saw it with Jimmy Garoppolo last year.
I am all for not playing rookie quarterbacks immediately. I think that's the dumbest thing. I think the Aaron Rodgers route is the way to go.
Yeah.
But if you have a chance to get to the playoffs and the rookie's the better guy, you play him.
Who's going to make less mistakes, though? Alex Smith or Mahomes?
That's the thing. Alex Smith's whole thing was always he never made mistakes, but he's starting to make more mistakes.
Okay.
Now his arm strength is starting to go.
Mm-hmm. And that's what's left of it.
Right. Well, that's why I'm saying short leash. No, Smith is your starter right now because he is the better quarterback.
Yeah.
But I think that could shift quickly. I am not expecting big things from Alex Smith this year. I think he's going to take a big step back this year.
Do you think Mahomes is the most talented quarterback that went this year?
Not right now. I think Peterman's the best right now simply because of what he has mentally.
Mm-hmm.
He's plateaued. I mean, he's as good as he's going to be. The example I use in Madden, you draft him as an 80, he reaches an 82 is his career peak. That's who he is. Whereas Pat Mahomes probably, I think he was like a 75 in Madden is why I'm saying that. But I mean, he's got that superstar potential. He's got the two arms ready to go. Right. He could be really good with the right prep. You mentioned the lack of weapons. This intrigues me because in the last couple of years, at least in our lifetimes, when the Chiefs are good, it's because they have Larry Johnson, they have Priest Holmes, Dante Hall, although I think that overlaps with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
But the Chiefs are really a good team when they have a good running back. Jamal Charles is gone, not that he was really good anymore with all the injuries. Spencer Ware is going to miss, you know, a good amount of time, if not the season. So I look at that as, and Mike Hurley kind of talked about this a little bit, the Patriots secondary is going to be maybe their most important unit this year, given the losses they've suffered in the front seven. Is this really a good measuring test for them? Outside of Tyreek Hill, they really have no excuses. Hill and Travis Kelce, but they've traditionally done well against tight ends. Their defense should not be an issue in this game for the Patriots.
Yeah.
If the defense has a poor game, the Patriots are in a lot more trouble than we realize.
Well, and you talked about it. Alex Smith has a noodle arm. It's not like he's going to be throwing 40-yard bombs or 50-yard bombs. He's going to be keeping it within 15 yards most of the time. So this isn't really a game where you're testing that secondary. If anything, you're testing the pass rush. You want to get to the quarterback, make him uncomfortable. I don't think that's going to be much of an issue for the Chiefs to handle this pass rush. But, yeah, it's not that big of a measuring stick. I think if they can't handle an Alex Smith-led offense this year with the secondary that they do have, you're in trouble. This isn't that great of an offense. Their biggest weapon, you have Travis Kelce. That's like the one guy you have to account
Travis
for.
Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill, just the flatline speed.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm sure it'll be McCourty over the top on whoever's on him, and they'll take it off the top.
It's easy to account for that, relatively.
Gilmore could be – I wouldn't be surprised if we see Gilmore on him a little bit, not necessarily because of the speed, but they like to run screens.
Mm-hmm.
To Tyreek Hill, and Gilmore can get through those blocks that the wide receivers are going to set. It should be a relatively painless game for the Patriots. It's definitely not as tight of a matchup as the last banner raising they had against the Steelers.
Yeah, it's also it's not as good of an opponent. I mean,
right.
I mean, you have to think that does play a factor into this game for the Patriots. They're going to be pumped.
Yeah.
You raise that banner in Gillette in front of Goodell, too, which is we didn't get the chance to ask
the crowd.
About
the
that.
Crowd is going to be going nuts on Thursday night. Portnoy's handing out
the
70,000 towels.
Clown Goodell.
If anybody's towels. Listening, if you want to grab me one, that would be great.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Yeah.
Unfortunately, we'll be working the pregame show. I won't be able to get down there. But if you want to grab me a towel, absolutely do that. Real quick here before we wrap this up. some NFL preview stuff. You know, talk big picture league here. Who's your MVP this year?
MVP this year, Tom Brady. I think he's
Let me ask you this: besides Tom Brady, who's your favorite for MVP? Because we're both going to say Tom Brady.
Besides Tom Brady, who is my favorite for the MVP? You go first. I need to think about that one.
So I'm a little in between on this. But if Zeke gets 16 games,
yeah,
he's ready. He's ready to break out. That offensive line only got better this year. Dak Prescott has another year of experience, so teams are going to have to respect the pass a little more. Traditionally, Dallas is a very volatile team in terms of they can't string together successful years. They'll be good one year, then bad the next, then good, then bad. So history tells us it's going to be a down year for them. But if that team finishes with 10, 11 wins, Ezekiel Elliott's going to look at the guys during the conversation last year. Brady, we took off the table. Mm-hmm. Matt Ryan, I think there's going to be a lot of Super Bowl hangover in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And really, Ezekiel Elliott was the third candidate last year for the MVP.
And Derek Carr.
So Derek Carr would be the other guy. That's your guy.
Derek Carr, I think Le'Veon Bell, too. He's going to be playing pissed off this year.
He never plays 16 games, and I think he has to play 16 games to be the MVP. Tom Brady showed us that last year. You have to play 16 games to be the MVP. Give me one team that people aren't looking at enough to be a factor this year.
A team that people aren't looking at enough to be a factor.
And for the record, unlike most radio shows, we did not prep this.
We're going off the top of our head. You know, I don't know. I think we
still need an intern, by the way. Get at us on Twitter @ Calling It Podcast. Help us with this stuff.
I don't think there's going to be any teams that really shock you. I don't really know that any team took a major step forward. Obviously, the Raiders are just going to continue to keep getting better. I think that's a team to look out for in the future. I think the Seahawks, with the moves that they've made, they're going to be very good. These are teams that have already established themselves as great teams in the NFL.
And, I mean, it could be a team that maybe people are expecting 9 or 10 wins that you could be looking at 12. That's a pretty big jump.
Yeah, the Eagles will be a good team this year as well. I don't know. I don't know which teams are going to take a big jump. I think the Raiders are the one team that has a defense that's, you know, young, that's getting older, that's getting better, obviously led by Khalil Mack, and a quarterback who is obviously the guy for them for the future. So I think the Raiders are the one team. They're going to take the next step up. That's going to be the number one threat to the Patriots this year.
So I said the Ravens earlier with Michael Hurley, but I really don't think people are expecting big things from them. I'm going to kind of stay in that area. This is my team every year. And eventually I'll be right.
The Bengals?
No, the Redskins.
The Redskins, okay.
Because Kirk Cousins is a good quarterback. I've liked him since he came out. I was upset that he got drafted the same team as RG3 because I thought he deserved a chance as to be the guy. Ultimately, he got it. They've got a great set of pass catchers down there, good running backs, good goal line backs. It's a very well-built team. They don't really have that superstar, although I think Josh Doctson could be that guy. Jamison Crowder, somebody who is criminally underlooked in the NFL. If they put it all together, and they didn't last year, they had the same talent last year, and they just didn't put it together. If they put it together, Trent Williams, maybe the best pass blocker in the league, if they can put it all together, that team should be right there in December for a chance to win that division, at the very least a wild card spot.
Really? Okay.
They have the talent. They just, for whatever reason, it's lack of chemistry or just bad luck or whatever, they can never put it together. Let's go the reverse. One team everybody's hyping up that you think is going to suck.
The Giants. The Giants, I think they'll be good. I think their defense has a lot of holes in it. That offensive wide receiving core is filthy. But I just think people hype them up a little bit too much. I don't think Eli's the Eli of old. We'll see. I think he's obviously a great quarterback, never gets hurt. He's got great weapons. And it's not the offense that's going to be the problem. It's going to be that defense. Will they be able to do a decent job? I'd say the Giants are the one team that's getting hyped up, especially in the division they're playing. And you mentioned,
right?
You know, they got three other teams that are all playoff contenders.
I think does Arizona count?
Yeah.
There's some people out there saying Arizona's going to be. I think Arizona could be bad.
Yeah,
like, really bad. They do have some playmakers on defense. I'm big on Tyrann Mathieu. Patrick Peterson's the best corner in the league. They have Chandler Jones. Outside of that, not much on defense. Larry Fitzgerald's a year older. More importantly, Carson Palmer's a year older.
Yeah.
And I'm not totally sold. David Johnson had a great year last year, but he strikes me as more of a Chris Johnson type, a Sean Alexander type, a 2-3 year flash in the pan guy than an Adrian Peterson who's going to have a sustained, successful career. I think he can't live up to the hype from last season. He's going to have a good year, but I don't think he lives up to the hype from last season. I think Carson Palmer, if he plays 16 games, that's an absolute accomplishment at his age. Larry Fitzgerald's going to play 16 games, but how effective can he be? And again, that division is tough with having to play Seattle twice. They do get the Rams are going to be okay because they have a good team outside of the quarterback.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, the Niners are terrible, but I'm not. I think Arizona could be looking at a 3 or 4 win year.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
If because a lot of it is a health thing, but they have so many guys that are just huge. Even Chandler Jones. Chandler Jones, a huge health issue. Tyrann Mathieu's coming off a torn ACL. Palmer's, what, 36?
Yeah, he's a guy who you forgets in the league.
Right. Larry Fitzgerald's getting up there. He's on the wrong side of 35. He's getting close to 40.
Yeah.
All those guys, plus David Johnson with the huge expectations on his shoulders, they don't have much of an offensive line. I'm not huge on Arizona. Before we wrap up the NFL here, real quick, one player nobody's talking about that people should be.
One player nobody's talking about. Well, I'll stay in New England. I think, and this this is an original take. A lot of people are saying this. I think Chris Hogan, this is his second year in the system. I think this is a year that you can see him have 900 to 1,000 yards receiving, you know, 70 receptions, especially with Edelman down. I think that in New England, it comes down to how comfortable you are with Brady, how comfortable he is with you. It's another year into the playbook. I think they're going to be meshing a lot this season.
So I have two. A guy you're not going to win the MVP, but I think will be in the conversation this year is Jameis Winston. They've done a terrific job down there in Tampa getting him set. He's got two stud deep ball wide receivers in Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson. Those are the kind of guys he wants to throw the ball to. That offense is perfectly tailored to him. If he doesn't have a breakout year this year, he is not the long-term answer for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, this is a huge season for him.
This is a huge season for him. If he can't, they should win 10 games. They absolutely should be in the playoffs. If he can't get this team to the playoffs, they need to look elsewhere under center. And then a former Tampa Bay Buccaneer, people aren't talking about enough, former player is John Lynch. The Niners are bad, but he had a great offseason.
He did, yeah.
He did a good job not picking Mitchell Trubisky. I thought the right thing to do, and we talked about delaying rookie quarterbacks. This is even better. Don't take the rookie when the team's not ready. Get the defense in place. Get the offensive line in place. It's what Cleveland's doing right now. And then when everything else is set and the quarterback's not going to be running for his life and is going to have some breaks, the defense can get themselves off the field, then you bring the quarterback in. And I love what John Lynch is doing in San Francisco. Obviously, still very much a work in progress, but he may have had, outside of Belichick, the best offseason of any NFL GM.
I'd agree with that. And your logic there with the Browns, they're starting their quarterback, their rookie quarterback. Kizer's starting.
But I don't think it's different because I don't think Kizer's the long-term guy.
You don't think so?
I think it's more of they're starting him as a showcase.
Okay.
If there's one long-term guy on that team, it's Kessler. And I actually like Kessler.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think he's not. It's a Jimmy. Remember Jimmy Clausen with the Panthers? Yes, they drafted him. Yeah. There was 1 year and then they went to Newton. I think it's a Jimmy Clausen kind of situation. Another Notre Dame guy, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
I think it's a Jimmy Clausen kind of situation.
Brady Quinn.
Yeah, exactly. That the Browns have been down this road before, but hey, look, did you see Josh Rosen last night?
I saw that. Yeah.
I think Josh Rosen might be their guy. There's a couple other people who might be their guy.
Not the Jets have anything to say about it.
Exactly. We'll get more into this on the other side. College football, what a first weekend. We break it down on Calling It. Keep it here.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Yeah! Roll Tide, baby! How about that game Saturday night? How about them Tide?
You had a good time, I know that.
I was down there, man. That stadium is something, first of all. That stadium's incredible, and then that was my first real, like, big-time college football game. No offense to the Cortica Jug, but...
come on, it's a D1 atmosphere.
No, it's not. No, please, no, it is not. That was... That was... I've never been to a sporting event like that. That was incredible.
You can compare it to Cornell games. I guess that's D1.
No. No. The tailgate 8 hours before kickoff was bigger than a Cornell game.
Oh, I'm sure. Probably nuts.
I unfortunately wasn't there for game day because I flew down the day of. But the game day, people don't know this. I didn't know it. Is actually an all day thing. They have the show in the morning, but they have different things going on throughout the day if you're there. And what a first weekend overall. Probably wasn't the best game on the field. I probably enjoyed it more just because when I was there and two, I was rooting for the winning team. But last night, How about those games last? I know you were mostly on the Red Sox.
Yeah, I was watching the Red Sox.
But did you see the Josh Rosen comeback?
I did see 44-10, came back to win, what, 45-44?
The Falcons look like they're bitched at Texas A&M.
Yeah.
And I turned. I'm a big Rosen guy, but I feel like every time I watch him, I'm less and less impressed. And maybe it's a Pac-12 thing that a lot of what I pick up is on hearsay because his games start at 10:30. But I was watching last night. I'm watching the first quarter. I'm like, all right, I can't. I get it. It's not his year. The offensive line was garbage. And then somebody texts me like, your boy Rosen's lighting up. Haha, very funny. And then I turn it on, and they're right there. That throw he made to get them within one score, fading back off the back foot, 15-yard dime.
Yeah.
That's an NFL throw. That, and everybody says, oh, Lamar Jackson's so good. He is, but he can't make that throw. And that's the difference between a college quarterback and an NFL quarterback. And there may be more quarterbacks in college this year that can make that throw than there have been in a while. But there's going to be a race to the top of the draft board this year. And I think after last night and after everything that happened this weekend, he is firmly in the lead.
Is there anything that's better for a player's reputation in regard to scouting than come from behind wins where you're on national television and you come back from a deficit that big?
A come from behind win where everybody else on the team is doing the best to screw you over. You had the dropped pass on third down. You had two plays before one of his receivers caught the ball over the first down line. It was a 3rd and 15. Mm-hmm. Caught the ball beyond the first down line. Could have just the defense was right there. Could have just gone down, had the first down. He doubles back around to try to get more yards, and in doing so, he gets tackled behind the line of scrimmage and costs his team a first down. Rosen has to pick it up on, it looked like Brady to White against a six-man rush, just dumps it off to the running back who gets the corner on the next play. He looked like an NFL quarterback last night. He was something. And add to that, Josh Allen, not great against Iowa with Wyoming, again, partly because of the offensive line. DeAndre Francois will be a non-factor now. He's out for the year because his offensive line sucks. Darnold wasn't great. I don't think he was what people expected. He was good. But there seems to be this theme here where all of the top quarterbacks, maybe save Darnold, have bad offensive lines. Even Allen in Wyoming, that line is bad by FCS standards. And that's going to be interesting to watch this year. You also had the West Virginia-Virginia Tech game come down to the final seconds. That was a lot of fun, reigniting a classic rivalry. How about Baylor losing to Liberty? And not that UNLV is a great team, and I thought the odds were a little high, but 45-point underdog Howard beating UNLV. The spread wasn't right, but that's still something.
And UNLV paid $600,000 to get them to play him. They paid Howard $600,000 to upset them, pretty much.
And I didn't know Cam Newton's brother was Howard's quarterback. I didn't know Cam Newton had a brother. He's gonna be on draft boards now. That game is going to get him some recognition. Just a great first weekend of college football. I know you watched some of the games, probably not as much as I did. You were more locked in on the Red Sox this weekend, but what did you see this weekend that stood out to you?
I think it just goes back to Josh Rosen. And I'm watching the games, I'm going through my Twitter feed, and obviously going to school up in New York, a lot of Jets fans who are on my timeline, and it seems like he's the guy. They want Rosen to be their quarterback, and it seems like right now he would be the number one pick in the draft. So when I'm watching college football, I'm not watching it because of the storylines, because, you know, I think this team's going to go all the way. I'm seeing who's going to be the next big thing in the NFL. Looks like Josh Rosen, again, a come-from-behind victory on national television, come from behind 44-10. Craziness.
I think it was actually Michael Hurley tweeted out the picture of the scoreboard, and it's Fox. So they have the long scoreboard. It's not the box.
Yeah.
It said, a little harder to put this one on a t-shirt. May need to make headbands, which I thought was one of the better comments of the night. So I do like, and if the Jets have the first pick, I don't think the Jets are going to have the first pick, by the way.
You don't think they're going to be the worst team?
So I formed this take before they made that trade this week, and I may have to go back and look at this. I think their defensive front and their safeties, their two young safeties, those guys, given the weak schedule they play, are going to luck them into a couple of wins. They're going to be bad. They may still get their quarterback because, and I'll get in a sec, there's another guy I think has a legitimate shot at the first overall pick that's not a quarterback. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if just because they have their talent is so concentrated at two pretty key positions, I think they may end up with three wins, and I don't think that's going to be enough.
Yeah.
Like I said, the Niners, with a great work in progress, are a bad football team. Mm-hmm. That's maybe a one or two win team. The Jacksonville Jaguars are maybe a one or two win team. The Chargers could end up, if Philip Rivers decides I don't want to do LA and bails, and it seems like he's kind of starting to check out, that team's going to be a train wreck.
Yeah, and they're going to be a train wreck anyway. Philip Rivers is taking a step down.
The Jets have too many guys that are trying to find spots on other rosters in the future, and they have too much talent on the defensive line in those two safeties that they're probably going to luck themselves into 3 or 4 wins, and I don't think that'll be enough this year.
So do you think they trade away Sheldon Richardson to kind of weaken that defensive line?
Well, not just weaken it. They get the extra pick. Yeah, they get a good receiver with team control. Yeah, so, I mean, maybe that was part of it. I thought that was a good trade for both teams. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't think they're the worst team in football. They have too many talented – not that their talent is too concentrated for them to be the worst team in football.
But who's their quarterback? Is it Savage? Is that going to be their guy?
We don't know, but it's not necessarily an offense thing. It's going to be like the Rams.
But if they can't score, they're not like.
It's going to be like the Rams a couple years ago. They won 3 games because their defense was good enough occasionally to hold bad opponents to a field goal or two during a game.
The problem is, though, like their defense has been stacked in years past. They're still not well coached. Like, for me, it comes down to their defense being able, and I know this is a college football segment,
yeah.
But I think they're not well coached. So I think they're going to be 2 wins max. This is a horrible roster. They had a great defensive line, with the exception of that defensive line and their safeties. You said that there's not much on that team.
So Florida State had one potential top quarterback, DeAndre Francois, who I thought played great through that first half, despite mm-hmm. a terrible offensive line. Looks like shades of last year. He's just running for his life. He could have potentially been a top pick if he had come out this year. But there's another guy on Florida State who I think could be a high pick. Derwin James, number 3 on the defense. And I say on the defense, I can't give a position because they'll line him up at safety. They'll line him up at linebacker. They lined him up at defensive end. I know he is technically a safety. That is the position he practices with. But this dude is what everybody thought Jabril Peppers was. He was by every single play on Saturday night. All over the field. Can play a multitude of different positions. Got a little bit of time on offense, too, in pregame. They didn't end up throwing him out there because the game got out of hand. But he could be... You want to talk about a potential defensive first overall pick? Derwin James... maybe that guy for the first guy in a while. He looked closer to Tyrann Mathieu defensively than anybody I've seen since Tyrann Mathieu. He was legit on Saturday night. He's going to be in the running for the Heisman. I was a little disappointed by Bo Scarborough too on Saturday night because he's a guy I think should be in the running for the Heisman. He wasn't great. Alabama's offense as a whole wasn't great. I thought they were past the Lane Kiffin days, but they wouldn't throw the ball down the field. A lot of runs early, a lot of screens early. Jalen Hurts, still too quick to tuck and run. He won't let things develop downfield.
He had under 100 yards passing.
He wasn't great. And, yeah. I mean, it was a classic Jalen Hurts game where he's frustrating, he's scrambling too much, he's taking bad sacks, but late in the game, he'll make the one play. Mm-hmm. And mentally, he's great. He's going to make a great coach. He's got it all in the head, and he understands the game. The moment is never too big for him. You go back to the LSU game last year, yep. And running for that touchdown on 3rd and 15, He's got all the intangibles, but he's still just too quick to run the ball. He can't make some of the throws he needs to make. The deep ball to Calvin Ridley was great, but that was more of a blown coverage than anything else. I'm curious if Tua, not even going to try to pronounce his last name, Tua Nasapopo, I think, gets a chance as the Alabama quarterback this year. He'll probably get reps against Fresno State next week. Jalen Hurts' job may be in trouble. Not that Jalen Hurts is this big NFL prospect, yeah. Or anything. He's the next Blake Sims. And he's been really fun to watch, and I love the heart he has. I love the guts he has to go into Death Valley, win that game against LSU the way he did. But I'm not totally sold on him.
And you know Nick Saban will not be quick to take him out. He's heartless when it comes to taking out players he loves the most. So.
And you'd think it would be easier now with Lane. And by the way, Lane Kiffin got smacked over the weekend at FAU, which was... I don't know if I hate any football coach more than I hate Lane Kiffin. I don't know why people keep giving him work. I don't understand. If anybody was as bad as their job at Lane Kiffin, they would be fired so quick. And he keeps getting job after job after job. But without Lane Kiffin, I was hoping they'd open it up a little more Bo Scarborough, a little more play action deep. Jerry Jeudy's a freshman wide receiver they didn't use at all, who I thought would have a big game. So
it's Navy, too. It's not like they lost like a huge team. Yeah.
Post-Keenan Reynolds Navy. So I'm...
I'm looking at the stats right now. Their quarterback, AB, was 3 for 10, 110 yards passing.
Navy's quarterback?
Yeah.
Yeah. Screw you, Lane Kiffin.
235 yards rushing, too. Not too bad.
To be fair, Lane Kiffin's an offensive coach. Well, his family history's in defense. He couldn't even do that. That's his excuse. Terrible coach. I hate Lincoln. I hate Lincoln.
I'm not a fan either.
I can't stand him. But yeah, Alabama, I didn't think they were as good as everybody thought this weekend. But I thought the same thing against USC last year, and they ended up being one of the best college football teams we've ever seen. While all this was going on, the Red Sox played a crucial four-game series with the Yankees this weekend. Didn't really go how we expected last week. We'll tell you why after this. Calling It, we'll be right back.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
It's that kind of week.
Yeah.
That was bad.
That was not a good weekend for the Red Sox at all.
And I realized this driving in this morning before we get into the games, kind of big picture. We talked about before we went off the air last week that the Red Sox could put the division away this weekend. Not only did they not do that, the Yankees won the season series. So they automatically have a game built in. If they finish tied, the Yankees are going to get the division now. The Red Sox just needed a split, and they couldn't even do that.
Yeah. Fortunately, the Sox season here on out, with the exception of that last series, is relatively weak.
So I did
glass half full
this week. So I, being very conservative with all the teams going into that series, and this included a Red Sox split with the Yankees, I figured out hypothetical win totals for the Red Sox, Yankees, and Astros. I had the Astros at 99. Again, we were being very conservative. The Red Sox at 91 and the Yankees at 89. So if you factor in now what happened this weekend, you take that same schedule, the Yankees win the division. That is an all too real possibility right now.
Oh yeah, it's 3.5 games. We're first week into September.
That's a pennant race. That's a legit pennant race. That is not put away.
It's good news because the Yankees and Red Sox are fighting for a playoff.
Oh no, it's going to be exciting, but I don't think it's going to be fun for us. I don't think we're going to enjoy it. I said it back in, what was it, June? It might have even been May, 2011. Chicken and beer. This team has that kind of mental makeup. I am worried about what's going to happen this month to the Boston Red Sox.
And a smaller lead.
Yeah, you're right.
So I just think that they're getting cold. They're a streaky team. They always happen. And I've always said this. It goes back to John Farrell being their manager. With the exception of 2013, they have been one of the most inconsistent teams in baseball. They're great one week. They're awful the next. And a lot of that's because of, you know, some guys just don't perform well late in the season. Chris Sale's one of those guys.
I am. And Adam Jones said it last week. He was right. You should be more worried about Chris Sale right now than anybody else because you said they're streaky. Mookie Betts hasn't hit a home run in over a month.
Yeah.
Xander Bogaerts has been ice cold. Rafael Devers is finally starting to look like a rookie. Andrew Benintendi may be the only good guy really in the lineup. The only guy in the lineup that had a good month last month. Mitch Moreland was okay, but those guys are streaky. I've seen Mookie slump like this before.
Yep.
Jackie Bradley, obviously we've seen him slump like this before. Xander Bogaerts. Chris Sale's not supposed to do this. They need him. He needs to win the rest of his starts, or they need to win the rest of his starts to win the division. I firmly believe that because Porcello is giving you nothing right now. Nothing. Pomerantz is starting to fall apart. I don't trust Eddie Rodriguez against American League teams. And you can't be counting on Doug Fister, who right now is your number two playoff starter. I don't think Price is coming back. I'm not counting on him. Matt McCarthy said in April, the Red Sox need David Price to win the division. I really didn't want that to be true, but that's true right now. Because as much as I can't stand that guy, I'd rather have him on the mound than Fister. I'd rather have him on the mound than Porcello. Yeah. And I can't stand that guy.
I don't agree with that. Right now, I'm Team Doug Fister all the way.
I don't think I'm not right. Because when he explodes, it's going to be spectacular. We've seen him when he's good.
Yeah.
But it really hasn't lasted more than two or three games at a time. And when he's bad, he is bad. He is 7 runs in 3 innings bad.
Only pitcher on this team, on the starting rotation, to have a playoff win. 4-2 in the playoffs all time, 2.6 ERA career.
What was his last one, like 5 years ago?
2014 with the Nationals.
3 years ago.
So it's been a while. I get that. I'm a big proponent of veteran pitchers who evolve their game. who learn how to pitch when they lose a little bit of speed on their fastball, lose a little bit of movement. I think he's one of those guys, and he's proven that these past three starts. And I know it's only three starts, but when you're on a roll in baseball, you can stay on that roll for a while. And I think that this is a guy who's kind of figured it out.
I don't think he can, because he hasn't done it this year. Remember back in June, he made three really good starts. After he went to the bullpen, he came back out of the bullpen, made three really good starts, and then really sucked up until a couple weeks ago.
I'd rather have him in the starting rotation come playoff time than David Price.
Okay, in a playoff game, it's a different story. Yes, I would rather have Pfister. But in that second last series against the year, against Tampa, against Toronto, and I need a game, especially the way Toronto has beaten up Doug Pfister this year, give me David. I cannot believe these words are coming out of my mouth, but give me. This is not me being in on David Price. This is not me saying David Price is a good pitcher. I am still as out on David Price as I was when he went on the 10-day, air quotes, 10-day DL back in what, May? July. It was during Patriots training camp.
Yeah.
When he was supposed to come back and make that start after the Eckersley incident. I am as out on David Price as I've ever been, but they need him back more so than Pedroia.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with that. You can always use pitching, and right now they have depth that they don't really need Pedroia. Although right now Pedroia's great right now because it gives Bogarts some nights off, and it gives the Sox the luxury to sit a guy who's been slumping like crazy.
But I don't think they have that luxury. They need their best players in the lineup night in and night out.
Yeah, and if they're not performing, though, they're not your best players.
That's
true. I look at David Price as a guy who is going to have to start in the bullpen. You can't just throw him out there, give him an 80-pitch max, and have your bullpen go seven innings or six innings. They need him to be a long relief guy to start, and if he gives you good innings in the bullpen, that's when you bring him to the starting rotation.
I would say the opposite. They need him to eat innings coming out, and then you move him to the bullpen in the playoffs, because that's the only place he's had success in the playoffs is in the bullpen. I'm not putting him in the playoff starting rotation, but I want him start, because the one thing David Price has always been able to do is eat innings. He is, because what essentially the statistic innings, what does innings tell you about a pitcher?
They keep their pitch count down. They're efficient.
Well, just that. What does innings measure? It doesn't measure it. What measures an inning?
Longevity. What?
Outs.
Yeah.
Innings count outs. David Price has always been, however many runs there are in the middle,
yeah,
David Price has always been able to get out.
Yeah, seven innings. Yeah.
That
usually
is what they need. They don't have that guy in the rotation. God knows Drew Pomeranz
isn't that guy. Doug
Pfister's
been that guy, though.
He had, but he can't stay in games, though. When has he gone deep into a game that he wasn't? Yeah, he had the one hitter against Toronto.
His past three starts, I'm going to bring him up now. His past three starts, he's gone at least seven innings in all three of those starts. So I look at him as a guy who you can definitely count on down the stretch, because he has been the past three outings for the Red Sox, and he's someone who can keep his pitch count down. He's not a power pitcher. He's someone who pitches to contact. And when you have a guy like that, so I'm going through his last three starts, seven innings in the last two, and obviously three starts ago, he went nine deep. The start before that, he gave up five earned runs, but before that, six in the third, three earned runs. Before that, seven and two thirds with two earned runs. So four out of the past five starts four out of the past five starts for Pfister have been very good quality starts. I'm going off of that sample size. I'm looking at that. I'm saying I'll risk it. If he's good 80% of the time, I trust that more than the David Price, who's coming off the DL.
I don't think it will last. And then going back to something else you said, and obviously Pedroia back would be huge, but without Pedroia back, and he's supposed to come back soon.
Pedroia is back.
He is back, pardon me.
So Pedroia this weekend was, yeah, you were right.
Right, he came back this weekend, yep.
Yep.
But even still, with limiting him, and you said, you know, sometimes you need to get these guys out of the lineup to get them off the side. There is zero, John, listen to me, John Farrell, listen, zero reason for Brock Holt to see the field.
He shouldn't even make
the rest of the
roster.
Year. He should not. Give me Zue Lin before you give me Brock Holt.
I agree.
He's disciplined at the plate. Look, I feel bad for Brock Holt. I love watching him play, but I think he's still dealing with the post-concussion symptoms. He just doesn't look like he can focus. And it's not like a him issue. Like, he's not focused. Like, he doesn't want to play. I think he wants to. I think there's still something medically wrong with him.
Well, he's always banged up, too. Like, he has a leg injury. He has a wrist injury.
Keep Brock Holt off the field.
Yeah.
Please. You know who I want to see? Bryce Brentz has hit 31 home runs this year in Pawtucket.
I didn't even know
and
that.
They are, for whatever reason, adverse to putting him on the 40-man.
The Red Sox don't need any power hitting.
No, they don't, because they are fine playing Brock Holt at third base in the middle of a pennery. Beyond frustrating. And it, just this weekend, it was a culmination of everything. You had, who is it? I know there were a couple of home runs last night, but Todd Frazier really hit the dagger.
Chase Headley.
A guy you could have had. Chase Headley's not a guy who should be hitting that home run off Chris Sale.
Aaron Judge. Not off Sale, though. I think that was off.
No, Judge's was later in the game.
Yeah, it was later in the game.
But show me a bright spot outside of Benintendi. There's Benintendi, but
I think the most discouraging thing.
Didn't Addison Reed give up three runs last night?
He did.
Although, I see that right? I was watching UCLA
defense,
at this point.
In his defense, he could have gotten out of that inning without giving up one if the ump wasn't squeezing it. It was horrible.
There, so I heard there were bad umpires. Again, I was watching mostly college football last night. I heard there were bad umpires.
Yeah, he could have, and he came in the sixth inning.
But that's going to happen.
Yeah.
And you need, that was always Clay Buchholz's problem, is he'd get one bad call and it would ruin him. And if Addison Reed's that same guy, that's scary, because that's your eighth inning guy. Mm-hmm. And imagine Clay Buchholz as your eighth inning guy.
That'd be brutal. I think the most troubling thing, though, for me is Xander Bogaerts, who I don't think it's a talent thing. I think he's someone who is going to consistently have durability problems in his career. He's 24 years old. And he can't stay on the field and be productive. He can stay on the field. He just sucks when he stays on the field. And he's always hurt. I think you got to move that guy off of shortstop.
We've seen that. They move him to third, and he just doesn't want to play anymore. If he's not playing shortstop, he doesn't care.
He's got to do something
else. They should move him down to seventh. Everybody they've moved to seventh in the lineup this year has hit well.
Yeah.
We saw with Hanley. We saw with Moreland. If only they could have Bogaerts and Mookie hitting seventh. So coming up this week, I believe they have, if you want to pull up the schedule, I believe it's Oakland.
The Blue Jays right now.
The Blue Jays right now.
And then they got.
So this should be, last time they had a bad series, they rebounded very well against the Blue Jays. They should take two out of three against the Blue Jays.
Yep. And then they have a day off Thursday, thank God.
Yep, need that.
And then.
Oh, good point.
And then they play Tampa Bay and then Oakland. All nine of these games are going to be at home. They have an off day Monday as well.
They should take seven of those nine.
You think, yeah, against these opponents.
Anything less is a disappointment.
Yeah. And then you have Tampa Bay again, then Baltimore, then Cincinnati, then Toronto. That is a cakewalk.
So that's what, six series between now and Houston?
And then Houston, yeah.
So six series, they shouldn't lose any of those
series. Yeah.
Seven series. They really shouldn't lose any of those series, maybe one of the road ones. And they should sweep at least one or two.
I mean, Cincinnati's brutal. They should sweep Cincinnati.
They should. If they are losing games to Cincinnati at that, if it's still this close and they're losing games to the Cincinnati flipping Reds, if they lose on Bronson Arroyo Day, I'm going to be pissed. How dare they lose on Bronson Arroyo Day? I will get preemptively mad at them for losing on Bronson Arroyo Day.
You also, the Athletics and the Reds are two of the
Those
worst
are
teams.
Bad teams.
They should sweep both of them, and then you know the Rays. And the Blue Jays, they've done well again. So, yeah.
All right. I think the fact that I'm bringing up Bronson Arroyo means that it's time to wrap up the show, because we're running out of things to talk about. That's going to do it for us this week. Next week, recap of the Patriots in week one of the NFL. Look ahead to week two. Maybe more Red Sox bashing. Maybe we'll be a little apologetic. I don't want to be apologetic. I'll admit I'm wrong, but I don't want to be apologetic.
Never. Never apologize.
We'll see.
It's my motto.
Low-key big week for the Red Sox, but my mind will be on football, obviously. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and on SoundCloud. He's Alex Lubowitz. I'm Alex Barth. We'll talk to you next week. This has been Calling It. Bye-bye.